Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 152. This is the 152nd edition here at the Caffeination. This, of course, is August the 1st, 2007. If you'd like to find this podcast, you can head on over to www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. This is, of course, the Caffeination podcast by proxy. If you'd like to send us comments, feedback, suggestion, whatever else you'd like to throw our direction, that's caffeination@gmail.com. The phone number where you can reach us is 215-240-1319 for all of your voicemail needs. The Skype ID is on our website, and Homing Pigeon, you can pretty much figure that out yourself. All right, so we have a really good show for you today. We'd just like to give you a quick little rundown, some of the little things that you might find on today's show. We're going to be talking about any and all of the possible upcoming topics right here. We're going to talk about cakes, babies, fat people, tornadoes, and bombermen, as well as a couple other things. Of course, we have all the best in tech news and tips that I can find and that are fit to speak, as it were. We also have a pretty interesting PodSafe musical selection. In case you were unaware, PodSafe Music, in this case from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, is actually a way for artists and individual artists and up-and-coming people or established people to put their music out so that podcasters like myself and some of the other people out there can actually use it royalty-free in 99.9% of the cases, so we don't run into any of the licensing issues that they have out there, because a lot of musicians realize the power of podcasting, the power of radio, as it were, so that, you know, they can get their music out there. They basically figured out, like, okay, so you have a group of people who are listening to your song. Yeah, the guy didn't pay to download it to put it on his show, but he's producing it to an entirely larger audience who might actually buy it. So, I mean, that's what they're striving for, and hopefully we'll be able to help them along here. We do have a fun little bit of information about today's show. This is going to be the last absolutely live Caffeination for about a week. We have a wonderful vacation planned with me and the family and I, as it were. So the wife, I, and the boy are heading down to Virginia Beach. Yes, we're leaving the confines of the Delaware Valley. Philadelphia is where I'm based, and we'll be heading down to Virginia Beach for about a week, but fear not, good fellows. There will be Caffeinations on both Sunday and Wednesday nights, as per usual. We're trying to record them ahead of time so that they will actually be there for you when you go to look for them. So hopefully that'll turn out to work correctly. If it doesn't, maybe I'll just have some fun, post a couple songs up there or something like that while we're on vacation. The wife looked less than thrilled when I had the idea of podcasting in the room while the baby's asleep. So we're gonna maneuver around that little marital issue, which may or may not pop up. We did want to talk to you a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. By the way, the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And we're also proudly sponsored by GoToMeeting. If you're looking for a better way to present or work together during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple. Web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen ends up showing up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. With GoToMeeting, it's perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaboration. You can meet as often as you want, as long as you need, for one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime. And you'll save a lot of money, you'll save a boatload of time. I mean, it's a win-win for absolutely everybody. So you can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. And you can try GoToMeeting free today. All right, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for sponsoring the Caffeination. We have a rather good working relationship with them. We've been with them for quite some time, since right around November. So they've helped to finance all the wonder that you see behind you if you're over there watching at Ustream.tv, which, of course, this being a Wednesday night show, we are actually recording live online. So if you'd like to just stop by and check us out, you would be able to on most Wednesdays. Not next Wednesday, but the following, of course. We thought about actually recording a video, but that seemed a little disingenuous and more than a little irritating to try and edit a hour-long video to put out when I'm not going to be here. So we're trying to work everything out. We're trying to get all the little kinks out of the system. So far, so good, though. Like I said, first of all, we'd just like to take this moment also to thank all of our new and returning listeners here at the Cafe Nation. These are people, yourself included, who have helped bring us up from almost nothing. We started as an incredibly hesitant podcast on the Podomatic Network, and we slowly worked our way up. Every email that comes into us, every positive and or negative comment that comes into us, helps fuel the creative fire that is behind and percolating the Cafe Nation, as it were. So one of these times, I'm actually probably for one of the episodes after I get back, I'm actually going to splice together a couple of the little clips of early shows, so you'll hear just how bad it was. Not only has the mic improved, but then again, the mic has improved since probably show 15 or 20, so it's really strange, because there are a couple people that I know specifically who have been listening since one of the first episodes, so it's been kind of cool so that they've seen the progression of the episodes and everything. And then there's also people who've listened to the first and thought it was really crap. By the way, this show started out as a 15-minute show, so we would already be one-third of the way over, and I would have probably already stopped about 17 times, because the inflection on the word wasn't exactly the right way, and I had a little Shatnerism going on at the beginning, and the editing was less than stellar. So we'd just like to thank all of our new listeners, everybody who's given us a shot for the first time, and thank, of course, all of our returning listeners. You are the reason that we keep doing this, so thank you incredibly. You have been nothing but supportive. We do have a fun little selection from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. It's actually a song that you've probably heard before. It's a I believe it's a ballad from the Civil War. It's When Johnny Comes Marching Home, but it's by a new band or a new artist named Hutch. I was like, all right, I know this song. Let me just give it a check, see. And it actually turned to be kind of addictive. Had a great little groove to it, and the guy's voice is really haunting, which is something that you need with this kind of song. So I just thought that we'd play it for you here on the podcast, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. So if you'd like to find Hutch, you can head on over to myspace.com/Hutch, and you'll see his profile over there. Had to get in early to get that one, I'm pretty sure. But again, here's from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Here's Hutch with Johnny Comes Marching Home Again.
Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah. All the people will shout and the bells will ring as the heroes come home to a welcoming. Yeah, we'll all be glad when Johnny comes marching home. Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah. Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. All the people will sing and the bells will chime in the name of freedom for this country of mine. Yeah, we'll all be glad when Johnny comes marching home.
That was When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again from the band or the artist Hutch and the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. All right, so we'd like to welcome everybody who may or may not be listening over at Ustream.tv, listening/watching. And we'd also like to welcome all of our all the other listeners out there. You are listening to the Caffeination Podcast. Just in case this happens to be on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, you can find this podcast over at www.caffeination.com. That's CAFFINATION.com. All right, we have a interesting show lined up for you today. Hopefully you will find it as interesting as we did to put together. This is Caffeination 152, T-2, because in 2 days, I am officially on vacation for a solid week, and it has been a long time coming. I gotta tell you, it's like I've had a couple little breaks here and there, but since Paul's been born, I mean, first of all, we haven't really gone on vacation with just our family yet. So, I mean, we had a short little weekend last weekend where we actually, I actually had to beg off on one of the Caffeinations just for a day to get everything situated and get myself in the correct frame of mind to record this wonderful show that I'm currently doing. But also, it's just going to be one of those real fun things. We've never been to Virginia Beach. The wife has this dream that she'd like to see every state before we go to meet our maker. So we're slowly working our way through the different areas. We have been through Virginia, and I'd like to tell her, you know, that we actually stopped by Arlington National Cemetery. Arlington's in Virginia. We can count Virginia. And she said, no, we actually have to stay there. So, all right, fine. We got to stay there. So we picked Virginia Beach. Heard nothing but wonderful things about there. So I will be able to give you a nice rundown on that. We have a little bit of No real general information other than to let you know how to get a hold of us. If you'd like to get a hold of us via email, you can send an email to caffeination@gmail.com. And the voicemail hotline is 215-240-1319. That's a direct-to-voicemail line. You won't have to talk to anybody. And there's a Call Me link on the website over at caffeination.com. You can click that, and their phone number will dial you to leave a voicemail. It's a wonderful little fun thing to do. All right, we do have a decent amount of tech tidbits for you today, a couple little caffeinated bits and food bites. Now, see, I keep struggling with the name of that section. I have the tech tidbits, which is nice because, you know, it's nice and tiny and it works real well. But the caffeinated bits is that always worked, but it doesn't really fit with the fact that I like to throw food in there as well. So, you know, food bites, it's kind of a cliche. It's kind of one of those things that you see all over the place. Whenever you see a cafeteria that's supposed to serve nerds or geeks, there for some reason they always use the word bites in there. Of course, because that's, you know, a clever little double entendre there. So hopefully we'll find the correct thing. If you have an idea, please send it in, but still. All right, tech tidbits here at the Caffeination. We're going to run down some of the more interesting stories that I've found in the internet tube land, or whatever else you'd like to say. I guess the superhighway is no longer the correct terminology for that. But the first little thing we have up here is actually from another one of the websites that I actually do. It's actually called boilerplate.com. It's boilerpl8.com. It's a little quick review site. The entire idea behind that site is to basically create an atmosphere where one of my biggest pet peeves about reviews is that you never get to see what you want to see on one page. I when I want to see a review, I'd like to see, okay, hit a couple bullet points, give me a little intro, give me a little outro, and then give me your rating. So that's exactly what I created. Now, I have a couple other people that I'm working with it on, and so far I'm the only one who's submitted articles, but yeah, that'll change in the future. We're growing slowly, that's what I like to say. I like to change the way reviews are done. I mean, it's great and wonderful if you're trying to pick out a computer, you're trying to pick out a power supply, and you have 14 pages of stats and graphs and everything else, but you know what? I always found myself skipping to the end. So we cut out the middleman there. If there's ever going to be links or anything like that, we'll put them in the middle of the text, but you can look at this on one page. That's the way we have it here. So I wanted to review one of the games that I recently downloaded on the Xbox 360, the Xbox Live Arcade. It's actually the new version of Bomberman Live. It's a great crazy game. But the fun thing about it is, if you don't have any Microsoft points, which if you don't know, Microsoft points are the currency of Xbox Live. Basically, you give them money, they give you fake money, and then you spend your fake money on stuff, and you really never know how much money you have. Well, 800 points is $10. Just work with it from there, and then you're all right. Sorry, got sidetracked for just a second. All right, so basically, they have these demos that you can download, and usually I always play the demo for any arcade game. The arcade games are kind of like mini games that live on your console. There's no disc you have to put in for them. They're fun little things to play with. So I always like to play the demos beforehand because I never trust anybody else's word. Now, the best thing about Bomberman Live is the demo itself has multiplayer. So my brother-in-law was over, we were sitting there playing the demo, and it was crazy because the demo was entertaining enough and had an entire full game that I could sit there, and we played multiplayer for like 3 or 4 nights in a row before I said, you know what, I wonder what else they have on the full version. And I have not been disappointed. It's a wonderful, intense game. So if you ever remember the old Bomberman, basically picture a grid system where there were kind of like there are pylons every other block. You are one of from 1 to, I think that's up to 4 to 8 players on there. 8 players online. I was playing that last night. Absolutely insane. Xbox Live, of course, you can play people across the internet. But it was crazy because we were sitting there and you have up to 4 people and you have to run around and drop bombs. Now, the bombs can only shoot horizontally and vertically on the grid. So they have all kinds of things. They have costumes. They have unbelievable game types where you have to paint the areas. I mean, I'm not going to ruin the whole review. I just encourage you to head on over to boilerplate.com. If you think that we actually did a good job on the article, you can actually dig that, or you can dig the Caffeination podcast. We have the fun little share and dig links at the bottom of everything now. We worked that out so it's correctly done. It's a neat little thing. You can actually click share this, and you can send an email with a link to our site. You can dig it. You can share it on, let me just see what else there is. You can dig, add it to Netscape, StumbleUpon, Technorati, Newsvine, Reddit, Tailrank, Windows Live, Magnolia, Blinklist, Delicious, Furl, Yahoo MyWeb, and Google Bookmarks. So pretty much any social bookmarking, any not-so-social bookmarking application that you'd like to bookmark an episode, article, whatever else we throw at you, you can do that on any of the websites that we actually host now, which is, you know, kind of fun, kind of interesting. But moving right along. Now, some certain people out there need to get a grip, and unfortunately the specter of racism raises its ugly head all over the planet. I mean, there are things that are definitely racist, there are things that are definitely not. It's the problem that you run into when you have a gray area, or when one person perceives a threat when there doesn't really need to be one. And I know it seems like a strange thing to preface a story with, but the new version of Resident Evil, in case you were unaware, is actually set in Africa. So you play a white quote-unquote hero who has to kill zombies, as you have in every other version of Resident Evil. The only thing is, in every other version of Resident Evil, you have encountered white zombies, or you maybe the stray black zombie. The entire problem that everybody seems to have now is that since it's set in Africa, and since they've changed the story to actually live in Africa for at least this episode, now there have been 4 others, and millions of white people have died in these 4 others. And by the way, it's made by a Japanese company, so apparently There is no racial bias in this one. So people are starting to get really up in arms about this and say it's obviously a tool for racists to train on, and it's a way for people to start hating black people. And it's, you know, I don't think that the actual the company sat out and said, you know what would really screw with people? We're going to put this game in Africa, and you're going to get to kill nothing but black people in the game. So now, they haven't come out and said that. It's only a couple screenshots, and it's only, like, I guess, inference at this point. And the most irritating thing about it is you don't need to take it that far. And because it wasn't meant that way. You know, it's part of the story. For instance, if, you know, I don't know, it's one of those things where it's like, if they had the story set in Africa and there were hordes of white people laying around and all the zombies were white or something like that, people would be up in arms saying that the African culture was being usurped. So if you're going to agree that there is freedom of press and everything like that, and you can write pretty much anything you want, if you have such an issue with it, then you can just not buy the game, vote with your wallet. But I don't think there's any larger conspiracy here. I mean, sometimes a game is just a game, and this one just happens to be set in an African village, and at least that's what we know so far. You don't know, maybe the the second half of the game could be set in Zurich, and you're sitting there killing Europeans. Or I'm pretty sure they could set one in Iceland next time. But the only funny thing is, the Asian company that makes it has not set one in an Asian setting yet. So I guess I guess you could sort of view certain parts of the things that they're saying, but it's another one of those things where I would really hold judgment until they actually get like a full demo or something like that out there. I mean, okay, fine, it's enough to make the company know, this is what you're looking like to us. So from non-gamers and people who are sensitive to that sort of pressure, then you are portraying this image. That's fine, but when you start taking it to the level of saying this is obviously racist, then you start entering into the realm of the crazy nut job that nobody listens to. So I just thought I'd put it out there for you. All right, now the next thing, it's a little bit more lighthearted, but still kind of a serious topic, is that we've seen this type of thing before. This is called the Zombo subscription computing model. It's being touted as a zero emissions PC. So of course, I don't know, I haven't looked at my machine lately, but apparently there's a muffler on there somewhere that's spitting carbon into the air as opposed to just heated air out through the rear fan duct. But basically, it's supposed to be a carbon-neutral machine. So it's $250 for the standalone unit, and it has some sort of Linux running on it. It has a 1.2 gigahertz processor, 512 megs of RAM, and it's a very small, thin client-style PC. I don't know exactly how much hard drive space, if any, is actually on it, as opposed to just the RAM. So it might just be a RAM disk that loads up. Now, the subscription computer model comes in where they actually say, okay, fine, you can buy $249 as the standalone unit, or for $99 we'll give you the standalone unit, and then you owe us $12.95 a month for up to 100 gigs of external storage. Now, it's a really good idea, and they actually end up giving you carbon credits, so like their data center is run in a green fashion. So if you are somebody who is really concerned about the environment and somebody who doesn't necessarily need a lot of processing power, it does seem to be an interesting idea. The only thing is, I distinctly remember in the last bubble, if you ask John Dvorak about that, we are currently at the end of this bubble, so I distinctly remember in the last bubble, they keep trying to put these internet appliances in homes for the grandmother, for the housewife who doesn't know how to use a computer, for the house husband who doesn't know how to use a computer. And now they're trying to market it, and I think they're actually going to have a little bit more success marketing it towards the eco geeks out there, which is kind of interesting because ecogeek.org is where we actually saw the article. But it's an interesting idea at its premise, and I would almost want to buy the $250 standalone version just to try and put it through its paces, because this would be a great PC to stick in the kitchen. We have plenty of PCs laying around here, but it'd be a great PC to stick in the kitchen just when my wife or I want to look up a recipe or look up something simple that doesn't need it, or if it could run juice, that would be even better, because then it could be a TV at the same point in time. But I don't think you're going to be able to stress the I think it's going to be unbelievably blindingly simple to stress this machine, but it's going to come with OpenOffice on it. It's going to come with a lot of really lightweight software, which is great, but I wonder exactly how much traction this is going to gain out of like the truly crazed eco geeks out there. So moving right along, again in the green energy thing, but there's actually a new way to create energy, and it's probably one of the strangest methods that I've seen so far. It's a man-made, quote-unquote, tethered tornado. It's touted as a viable source. So basically, there's an engine at the bottom which creates a enclosed cyclone, which funneled upwards has a debris-free field, so it's not going to interfere with any of the turbines. And I don't know, some kind of strange heat engine which uses thermals to create this, much in the same way that actual tornadoes are created. And it's apparently going to use around, they said, 1/20th of the amount of energy that it would use to create traditional power. This is actually going to use 1/20th of that and generate so much more. So the barrel that the tornado actually lives in, they were saying, is going to be something like 20 kilometers into the sky. That seems to be more than a little crazy. They said they're going to be able to coax 20 megawatts out of each one of the 10 independent turbines for around $60 million. Now, the thing that sci-fi buffs and everything else like that out there is looking at is saying, all right, fine, you can create this massive tornado. First of all, I'm personally wondering how it's going to affect weather currents in general. I mean, because you can't just cap it off and say, okay, fine, we have a tornado living in this building. Just don't go near there. Prime spot for terrorists and everything else like that. Second of all, what so happens? I mean, we've already seen what happens when a nuclear containment breaks down, but what happens if your tornado containment breaks down? You got an F5 that's been living in a barrel for the past 30 years that all of a sudden breaks out and gets ticked, but it's one of those things they really have to I don't know, maybe define some kind of turbine killing, a tornado killing system. So if containment, for instance, is broken, then somehow a motor throws the turbine into reverse and stops the tornado. But I don't even know if you could at that point. And then, if you're going to have an open-air tornado like this, so the top, the cap would be open. You're going to have plane issues. You're going to have all kinds of crazy weather patterns that are going to get developed about this. So we'll see exactly where it is. I have two links up there. One explains a little over at a gadget. Actually, explains a little bit more about the science behind it, and the other one actually focuses on the inventor of this, and that one's from the Sci-Fi Tech blog. So you can head on over there and read those at your own leisure. But I just thought I'd pass them along to you, and thought I'd just wanted to kind of invoke a little bit of a discussion about this. I think it's a great idea. I think it's great that people are thinking outside the box. You have this. You have the tidal power, which is actually entering into the final stages of testing at this point in time, which is great. They've actually developed a model that's, I think, a third of the scale of the ones that they want to actually deploy, and they're going to be releasing it into the tides to see how much power it can create and exactly what kind of pressures are affected by it. So that's going to be kind of fun to watch. And as soon as I find the correct stories, I'll pass them along to everybody. But we're keeping your eye on the alternative energy sources. Hopefully, we'll be able to find some. Crazy articles like the sky solar power nets and stuff like that. So we're just moving right along here. Apparently, JPEGs are no longer good enough. And if you're really into digital photography, if you're really into superior lossless communication, that is when you save a when you save an image to a JPEG, you actually degrade the image quality very slightly, depending on how much you set the little quality slider to. But there is no such thing as a JPEG that is not compressed. So, for instance, when you have the file open, it might be 30 megs. When you have it closed, it might be 6. You lose a little bit of data along the way. It's kind of like sending a fax down the line with just a little bit better of a camera. So the people are looking for the next high-definition image format that's actually going to be able to shrink the footprint of the file at the same time. And the holy grail of image editing and image storage is to find a small archival image format that is capable of lossless transfer, so that you're not going to have any data at all lost. So you're going to have all of the wonderful, gorgeous hues that you catch on a sunset right over the ocean, or any one of those number of things. I mean, just pick the most beautiful picture in the world. And if you save it the wrong way, it's going to look like crap. So everybody's looking for the new standard. And it seems to be coming, or one of the proponents for this seems to be coming from an unlikely source. No, not Apple. Actually, Microsoft has developed an HD photo format that's being considered for a new JPEG standard. Now, if you don't know this, JPEG is the Joint Photographic Expert Group. So it's more than just a file format. It's a fun little group of guys and girls. But still, they've actually created something called JPEG JPEG XR. So it's currently on Vista, so if you have Vista, you can use it. And it's originally called Windows Media Photo, but they shortened it. So JPEG XR just seems a little bit cuter, seems a little bit more compact. The National Archives actually use something called Mr. SID, MRSID, and I've also seen JPEG 2000. There's a whole bunch of other different things that I've actually seen used in the image archiving world, but nothing seems to be able to do what this one's saying that it can do. Apparently, it's capable of you know, fully flexible editing features. It has good compression, but at the same point, it can either do lossy, which is like normal JPEGs, you know, where you lose a little bit of the data, but it gets a little bit, it gets significantly smaller, or lossless, where it's true archival quality images that will not degrade over time or use. So it's kind of fun, and it actually has a favorable reaction so far from two of the camera makers. Nobody big yet, just Hasselblad. I don't even know who that is. Maybe it's the Hoff's camera company, and Foveron, but two of the smaller manufacturers, to say the least. But still, it's one of those things you might want to keep your eye on. Apparently, the deadline for submissions is sometime in October, so there are going to be other horses in this race. It's going to be a fun one to see exactly what becomes the new image standard. I do realize that there has been a competition for the new standard for MP3. The problem with that is MP3 has such a weight of marketing behind it that even if you even when you tell somebody, oh yeah, you're going to go to iTunes and you're going to download a song there, okay, fine, I'm going to get the MP3. No. iTunes doesn't give you an MP3. Well, yes, it does. I was able to put it on my iPod. No. They give you an ACC. Or an AAC, or they're like, well, what's that? It's like an MP3, just a bunch of different letters. And when you truly deal with the people who really honestly don't have the time nor the inclination to learn about all these little abbreviations that computer gurus like myself like to use sometimes, then you start kind of glossing over the facts that, oh, you know, this is a much better format. That's why formats like Ogg Vorbis have kind of gone by the wayside. First of all, because it has a horrible name. And second of all, I mean, it just doesn't sound technological enough. It's like, oh, did you save it as an Ogg? What? I mean, there are certain people out there who prefer their podcasts in Ogg Vorbis format, and I know Todd Cochran from the Geek News Central podcast actually saves his podcast in like four different formats at this point. Windows Media File, WMA, ACC, MP3, and Ogg. I do not have that luxury of the machine nor the time to do that, and we seem to be doing all right so far with the MP3 delivery method. So we're just going to move right along here. Now, this is the story that I was talking to you about a little bit ago. John C. Dvorak, yes, Mr. Cranky Geek himself, frequent contributor on Twit, well-published, well-recognized author, has been writing for PC Magazine for pretty much as long as the Commodore was around. He's one of those people who like to predict the ends of things. He likes to... He's a political pundit without a party at times. I really like the Cranky Geek show, and I like the argumentative nature of a lot of the stuff. And I also like how blatant he is at self-aggrandizement and self-promotion. So, you know, he's always throwing out the address of his blog, even no matter who interviews him or what. It's effective marketing. So he apparently has decided to aim his sights at the Web 2.0 bubble era and say it may be the worst yet. And he uses logic such as there have been several different bubbles throughout history, the history of technology it is. He said first you had the console wars, then you had the IBM PC clone wars. Now, if you're a little bit younger, you might not understand some of this, or if you're a little bit older, you're laughing at this point. Really, I swear. But then you have the beginning of the 90s, there was the PDA wars, the pads, where everything was going to be notebook technology. Then there was the CD-ROMs. Everything was going to come on a CD-ROM. And then he said, then you had the bubble in 1998 to 1999, where that burst and all the dot-com era ones went up in smoke. You know, pets.com, and all the stores were going to be replaced, and you were going to be ordering everything online. Well, you know what? Back then, you couldn't order pizza online with any kind of regularity. Now, I order pizza online quite frequently if I go to Papa John's. But we've been frequenting the neighborhood pizzeria more often. They don't have a website. So we're still stuck in the brick and mortar era when it comes to pizza delivery around here. But he said, you know, that bust, you know, crippled people, destroyed companies, and that was the worst one that we had experienced in the technology sector. And what he's seeming to overlook and gloss over, he says, you don't realize you're in a cycle, you're in a continuum. Well, here's the thing. We're always in a continuum. There is no cycle. There is a natural undulation to life. There is a certain amount of repetition. Whatever is old is new again. That's for some reason, that's why the 80s fashions are back, much to everyone's chagrin and horror. But it's just one of those things you have to take a real look at and say, okay, we may be... inching ever so closely towards the next bubble. But you know what? It's not going to be as bad. I don't think personally that it's going to be as bad. Of course, there's always going to be mass layoffs of people, and there's going to be companies that go kaput. But that's just the nature of things. These are called growing pains. If you ever read anything by Marshall McLuhan, specifically War and Peace in the Global Village, it's a great book. The guy was light years ahead of his time. He had the design for the internet. He planned how technology was going to evolve back in the 60s, before there was an internet, before there was ARPANET. So, I mean, it's the guy was a true visionary. And he also coined the term Global Village. And anytime you can coin a term, you're pretty much a winner. But basically, he showed that there's always this era of referred pain. So he said when radio came out, there was a hearkening back to a simpler time. When TV, specifically color TV, came out, or when TV became more popularized, the idea that people went back to an even simpler time, and for some reason Westerns were one of the most popular sections of TV shows that were on TV, because people were looking back to a simpler time. They said with every advent of new technology, with every advent of new... with a new way of doing things, with a new method for dispersing data, there's always a section of society, first of all, that resists. I mean, society naturally resists change at that magnitude, which some people argue both for and against the fact that podcasting is actually going to be one of those mediums that actually refer pain. It's going to be one of those things where it's going to be the return of the radio dramas. And you can already see it in some of the podcasts that are out there, and they're absolutely awesome. I personally love the old radio broadcasts, so Who Knows, The Shadow Knows, and the Green Hornet and all that stuff. That's great stuff. That's great cinema. That's great auditory cinema, if that even makes any sense. So there's a very large section of truth to what McLuhan says, but at the same point in time, Dvorak seems to forecast the end of the world at any given point in time. So, I mean, put your head between your legs and kiss your rear goodbye, according to him, because if you're involved in computers even in the slightest bit to protect your livelihood, you're going to need to, I guess, learn how to make stone tools, according to him. So, I mean, you can head on over there and read his little article, but it's very uninformative for his kind of pieces. Like I said, I love listening to him talk, and he's truly... A likable, cranky old guy. But at the same point in time, you kind of got to look at him and say, yeah, you might have been writing for PC Magazine for a while, but you were definitely stuck in the old media mindset. You cut your chops on much older media than is currently around, and you make your living by, for the most part, writing for a magazine. So as much as it's online, you are not really at the bleeding edge of technology. You're using capital gained from very old world media assets, and you're trying to gain new world credibility. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he's right. And it's kind of like the George Carlin thing. He says he doesn't pray to God, he prays to Joe Pesci, because at least he knows Joe Pesci can go do something. And he said whenever he was praying to God, he would have roughly the same rate of return. It'd be 50-50. So it's kind of like a long story and slightly anti-religion there, but at the same point in time, it's the same kind of thing with Dvorak's predictions. He's the Nostradamus of the older PC crowd. Half of his stuff is right, and when it's right, he trumpets it from the highest mountaintop. And whenever he's wrong, he says, yeah, I messed up, and then he moves right along. He completely glosses over it. And so do a lot of his detractors like to emphasize the negatives, and of course the supporters are like, you don't seem to be understanding. All right, well, moving right along, a fun little bit of news. Mac is now officially a Unix, and it's not just any Unix. It is registered as a Unix 03, which I don't even really honestly know what that means. They officially were recognized as a BSD earlier this year, which is kind of cool for them, kind of nice. But they've made the changes to the operating system so that they are now one of the big four, used to be the big three in the Unix world. So they are going to be huge. There are currently, let me just make sure. All right. Of course, I lost my place in on the website to actually find it. There are currently very few companies that actually make certified Unix distributions. They are as follows, and I quote: HP, IBM, Sun Microsystems, and Apple. Now, So you have HP, which bought DEC, which is the premier company for digital architecture. You know, they were a digital equipment company. They created a large part of the server market. You have IBM, Big Blue. I mean, old school, hardcore, big iron machines. You have Sun Microsystems. The internet is running on their stuff. And then you have Apple. That's very good company to keep. So only time will tell what this actually means, because it's for the next version of the operating system. So it's going to be fun to actually see if they open up some of the more clandestine and closed off sections of the operating system to actually take in some of the other distribution software. Because I've actually attempted to run some of the other Linux and some of the other Unix style software on there, and you have to do a significant amount of tweaking to get it done. And I'm pretty sure Steve Jobs isn't going to give that up anytime soon. So I wonder exactly what they had to tweak with their programming to actually get recognized as a real Unix. All right, now we've been doing a lot of serious stuff here at the Caffeination today. We do have a fun little thing I found from over at Gizmodo.com. It's fun with chemicals, basically. Rainbow Moments candles have colored flames for colorful arsonists. That's what they basically said. Now, here's a new twist on an old idea. There's been colored scented candles for a long period of time. Here, all the candles are white. The flame, you know, based on whatever additive you have in there, is the actual color accent. I like this idea. It seems great. I also wonder what this is actually going to do to some of the people who try and blow them out and things like that. So, because some of these, the metals and the solutions that they're going to mix in there, in order to tint the flame, like, for instance, if you put copper into a flame, it turns green. But it also creates a poisonous copper dioxide. So, I mean, there's a significant amount of the detractors for doing this whole colored flame thing. So I really wonder what it is, and it doesn't say exactly how much. All right, it actually says you can buy colored lamp fluid and making your camping thing that much easier. But, you know, there's actually birthday candle varieties and decorative home little tea light varieties. So it's going to be kind of cool to see exactly how much they come out with for the whole thing. They have tea light sets, larger candles. So they're just trace elements that actually change the way that the chemical itself looks. That's kind of cool. All right, well, next up, if you remember a little while ago, we actually talked about the problems with the RIFD passports, and you know, the fact that the system, much like the voting system that we talked about last time, is actually a very open and let's just say buggy system, and that people have actually managed to craft RIFD tags that are capable of stealing information from other nearby passports. That's bad. This story over at Wired is a gentleman who's actually managed to create a passport that, when you scan it and you attempt to look at his photo, it crashes and freezes the machine. This is kind of like a proof of concept code, and as far as I know, he hasn't actually released the code to anybody other than the people who make it. But Lucas Grunwald is considered an expert. So he's a passport consultant to the German Parliament. So this guy is bigger than big in the RFID section. So it's going to be interesting to see what this new revelation brings, because I personally really admire some of the hackers out there who break down systems and open them up and say, look, here's where your major problems are. You got to fix this, 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 and this. And then after you're done, come back to me again, see what else I can break. I mean, it's that kind of ingenuity, and it's that kind of constant oversight on software, which is only going to help us in the long run. So congratulations, Lucas, you broke a scanner. That's pretty cool there. All right, now the next thing is actually near and dear to my heart, but I don't think I would actually need it. It's an alarm system that saves kids from their parents. So basically, you've heard the horrible stories out there of people who, for some ungodly reason, leave their kid in the car and just disappear. They don't figure it out what's wrong. They forget that the kid's in there. So this is called the Childminder system. So it's a funky little system that clasps over the very center of the five-part harness. So where the normal little plastic clip is, if you've seen a recent car seat, this thing would sit there. And then there's a second part to it that's on your keychain. So when you remove the fob from the keychain, which is actually, I believe, you stick the fob into the little into the little unit on the baby itself. So this is like a massive undertaking for somebody who's going to then accidentally forget their kid there. If the two parts are ever more than 10 feet apart at ear-piercingly loud alarm sounds, this is a great idea in theory. It's $65, first off, which is well above the price point for... I mean, it's not above the price point for peace of mind, because I don't think you can really put a price on that, but it's well above the price point, I think, for a impulse purchase, for one of those purchases that's just there and say, oh yeah, of course, you know, this is the perfect safety device. You know, baby monitors are about as far as some people go, and most people don't ever plan on leaving their kid in the car. And you know, I guess if you have some major issues with your memory, this might be a good idea. But I could see a bunch of fun little other uses for the proximity detector in that. Maybe put a whole series of them on computers in the lab, and if they get more than 10 feet away from the base station, then they all fire off an ear-piercing alarm. That would deter thieves. You have to deafen them on their way out. That's the thing. Alright, the next thing we have up here is ninjas are everywhere. It's just a little one-off thing. It's something I found over at mopo.ca. Mopo, by the way, means master of the painfully obvious. Fun little picture they had up there of a broken wall, and there's a sign taped over it. It says, let this serve as a warning. There's a time and place for practicing secret ninja skills. The basement isn't it. So it's probably going to be some disgruntled parent. That's it. Just a fun little link, so you can head on over there and check it out. It's one of those things where you want to wonder exactly what happened to make this sign necessary. It's one of those things where you look at the crazy laws like do not crow chickens in bottles, and you wonder what tool actually decided he was going to try and grow a chicken in a bottle, and what happened to speed them along that way that they had to actually make a law about it. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the Tech Tidbit section. We have a couple little caffeinated bits and food bites for the next little thing here. So it's basically a bunch of little food information and food items that I found out there that I thought would be interesting, tickle your fancy, as it were. First thing up here, we've been all about the Transformers recently. I love the movie. I'm a big fan of the actual show, and it holds a near and dear place in my heart. And now this, apparently it does for this guy too. Morgan Valentine, actually that's the wife's name, I'm sorry. Morgan Valentine, I'm just going to read this little blurb here, better known as the best wife ever, ordered a custom-made Optimus Prime cake for her husband's 30th birthday. This thing stands over 2 feet tall. It's about the size of a toddler. It's relatively correct. It looks damn cool. And, it's just there's rocks, grass, trees, plants. I don't know if you can eat the rocks. I mean, that would be pretty cool. But I know you can eat the whole cake. And they don't tell you what the guy's name was, which actually sucks. But I'm assuming it's Mr. Valentine. But Mr. Valentine shows you there with a big poo-eating grin on his face as he stands next to the Optimus Prime cake. It looks to be around like a foot and a half, 2 feet wide. So this is a massive chunk of cake flesh. Just thought I'd pass it along to you. And I would definitely go for that for my next birthday. It was apparently for his 30th birthday, so not too far off for us here at the Cafe Nation. all right, moving up next, minimalist design for nutcrackers. Not necessarily the thing you'd think of right off the bat, but imagine a steel tube with a slice diagonally going across it. You pull the two pieces of the tube apart. You place your walnut inside, not your walnut, the actual walnut that you're attempting to crack. You give it a slight twist with almost no physical effort whatsoever, and when you actually open it up, it gives you a perfectly cracked walnut with all of the seeds and the ooey-gooey goodness that is inside them just spilled out onto the table. And apparently it's so much easier than actually using a real nutcracker, not just one of those fake ones that you can get from Germany. So it's just kind of cool. just thought I'd put it out there. I'm a real fan of simplistic design, a real fan of minimal effort when it comes to doing certain things. Like, I'm all for fresh herbs and everything, but when I'm cooking, but sometimes the dried herb, well, most of the time the dried herbs are just right there, so it's just that much easier to take care of, you know. Alright, next thing we have up here, not really a food or anything else like that, but apparently a Japanese company has decided to call out the obese. So it's a chair system. It's a lovely, glowing, soft, cool blue cushion, and it's sitting in what appears to be an octagon. When a svelte person sits on it, it glows its normal, loving, cool blue. I assume, well, the heavier you are, the larger of a load you bring to the table, the redder it gets. So I'm assuming it fades from blue to purple to red to infrared. So if you can't see anything there, you got a real heifer laying on it. But it's going to be fun to see exactly if this actually makes it anywhere. But it's one of those crazy products that you see and say, you know what, that's a good idea on one point, and on the other point, man, that's just rude. I would hate to be over some guy's house, and you know, I'm not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't believe that I'm obese, so I would wonder, you know, the median height weight ratio. So you know, so I would wonder if how many people are you going to offend at your party by having this as the prevalent seating? It'd be kind of fun to see, you know, but still. And then the last little thing, again, talking about minimalistic design and a small, tiny little. As we were saying, minimalistic design and small, tiny little. Gadgets that you can pull out for your kitchen and everything. There's actually a fun little gadget from listed over at the blog.sci-fi.com/tech. So the sci-fi tech blog. It's actually a way to hack your corn. So it's actually kind of like a plane that you would use for wood. And much like that, the plane actually runs across the surface of the corn cob and peels the kernels off for you. So instead of taking a knife and having to go right down it, it's a fun little way, and it has a nice little cup to collect them on. They sort of make fun of it over at the sci-fi tech blog and say, oh, you know, because of course this is the most horrible problem that needs to be solved on the planet. But you know what? It actually makes a little bit of sense. First of all, it's only $12. So you know, that's right within the price range for kitschy little kitchen gadgets, you know? But second of all, we were trying to find a way to give corn to our son a little while ago, and I was like, well, you know, I could take the knife and, you know, given my past track record with sharp objects and or injuries, this doesn't seem to be the best idea. So this removes the sharp object, removes the threat of slicing my thumb off, also removes the fact of having to hunt down the corn all over the kitchen. But at the same point in time, you know, it's not something you need. This isn't the mixer. This isn't the handsaw for the garage. This is something that makes stripping the kernels off corn very simple. So it is what it is. There is nothing else there for it. All right, well, that about brings us to the end of the Caffeination Podcast. We'd like to thank everybody who's stopped in over at Ustream.tv, or if you're still watching. And we'd like to thank everybody who's listening in over at Caffeination.com. That's www.caffeination.com. This has been a wonderful show. We were happy to have you with us. Just give you a couple little rundowns for things. First of all, this is the Caffeination Podcast, as we said. If you'd like to send us comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw our direction, comments, good or bad, are always recommended and welcome. We like to think of even the nastiest, snarkiest comment as a constructive criticism. Maybe I don't need to suck just so much on the next episode. All right, well, you can send them all over to caffeination@gmail.com. The phone number for comments, feedback, suggestions, and all voicemail format is 215-240-1319. It's a direct-to-voicemail line, so you won't have to deal with me, I swear. The Skype ID is Caffa-Nation, so Caffi-Nation. That's about it. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. That's Blubrry. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. And speaking of MySpace, the ever-present MySpace, we're over at myspace.com/caffeination. So we'd like to thank everybody out there who's listened in, tuned in, done whatever out there, and thanks for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.